Valley 104.9 goes behind the scenes with former King County Councilperson Kathy Lambert every Tuesday at 6 p.m. and Sunday at 6 p.m. as part of Valley 104.9's Community Talk and Info Sundays.
Thank you for joining me tonight at Behind the Scenes with Kathy Lambert. Wow, what a week I have had. So there are many things that I want to tell you about, and it's hard to pin down which of all the things I want to talk to you about. So I hope that you will continue to listen as we go in the next couple of weeks as I talk about a variety of different things. For those of you that know me, I like to go to primary sources. I like to hear from the people who have experienced something directly to say, hey, what was the facts as you experienced them? And as many of you have maybe heard me say before, there was an issue in the county that at the time was really, really whitewashed. And they didn't give a lot of information, and the information we got didn't pass my sniffer test of even being accurate. And lo and behold, several years later, I'm on an airplane to DC, and I see that employee. And we recognized each other, of course, and we stood up all the way across the United States, and I interviewed him. And finally, the stewardess said, you two have been so involved in this conversation. I hate to tell you, we're about to land and you have to sit. So it's very interesting whether you are in an elevator or a bathroom or at 35,000 feet, just how much you can learn when you're talking to a primary source who doesn't think anybody else is listening. And I like that information that's unfiltered because it gives me the opportunity to decide for myself what do I think is factual and what is not. So on that, I want to tell you about a funny experience I had this week. I was wearing a shirt that said, I believe in common sense. And I must have been stopped 20 times that day saying, wow, me too. Oh, there's so many things that are going through my head, and I don't even know what to believe anymore. The Seattle Times said this, NBC said this, and now I know it's not true, and I just don't know what to do. And so, you know, I talked with each person about, you know, getting to know the facts for yourself, and people who pay attention to the news, listen to the right and the left, and make up their own mind on what am I being fed? And is this accurate or is this a statement that's coming from a particular viewpoint? So the funniest part was I went into the store and a man that was serving me said to me, I really, really like your shirt. And I said, oh, great. Why? And he said, because I don't know anybody who thinks. And I stopped for a second and I'm like, thinks about what? And he goes, thinks. I'm like, oh, well, then you need new friends. And so we had quite the conversation about who thinks and how do you think? And that conversation with that man, I just decided he needed a new friend and he asked me to be his new friend. He said he doesn't know how to vote because he doesn't know what's accurately being said and what's not. And I talked to him about the idea that you pick. Do you think that what happened with parental notification during this last legislative session, do you think parents shouldn't have the right to say what happens to their children? Do you think that they should be able to hide from the parents what's happening at school? Do you think it's appropriate to start talking at the quote, quote, kindergarten level about sex? I'm sorry, I really don't think that there's a whole lot that the kindergartners need to know about sex, other than I'm a boy and I'm a girl. And so anyway, I told him that I do know most of the people running and that I put out a little information about who I would recommend. And so he wanted to be on my list and asked if I would come back and talk to him about these things. And I said, I'd be happy to do so. So as I walked out, I thought, oh my goodness, that was amazing. So how do we think? And, you know, some people think of, you know, well, I believe this or I believe that, and it's my bias and don't confuse me with any other facts. But sometimes we have to evaluate our own biases to be able to say, is the filter that I'm using in my life to make decisions, is that a good decision or is it not a good decision? And if somebody tells you something and then over time it proves to be not accurate, anybody can make a mistake. Anybody can be not accurate. But if it's a really big thing or if it turns out that they continue to not be accurate, then you need to say, is this really a friend or is this somebody I really want to listen to? And I said this before, but when I had some people saying things about me, I said to my dad, oh my gosh, you wouldn't believe what they're saying. And my dad said, what is the truth, honey? And I said, well, what I said is the truth. And he said, then stay there. Because over time, it will prove that you are right in what you've said and that you are a truth giver. And that is the best that you can hope for, is that people will know that you're a truth giver. Not that they have to agree 100% of the time, but that you did your due diligence and that is what you believe was true. Because people want to have people to rely on. And I have found over the last couple of years that things that people said that I said were not accurate have all turned out to be accurate. So, the fact that the Seattle Times did not want the stories, they wanted to say things that weren't accurate. They wanted to omit information and blatantly told me that they had gotten a phone call from the county saying, don't tell that information. We don't want it reported. And we've just seen that this week. There was, I hope you all know, that this week, the President of the United States, whether you like him or you don't like him, it doesn't matter. He is the President of the United States. And until we find out that he's not competent to do that job, then we need to show respect. And for those of you that believe in the Bible, we are to pray for our elected officials. So he did a amazing job going to the East and talking with people who have not been good partners with us and other countries, people that have been at war for forever, or not quite as long as forever, but long different times, and started getting people to the table. So when he came back, some of the TV stations had lots of information. Some TV stations each night covered what had happened during the day. And then NBC and CNN collectively only had about 1 minute of information. And interestingly enough, at one point, they said, yes, these things were accomplished, but how do we know they'll be followed through with? Well, I'm sorry, how do you ever know anything's going to be followed through with? It takes time to be able to say, okay, this is what we negotiated, this is what they signed. We have video of seeing that, in fact, different parties did sign agreements. There were witnesses. We saw it on TV. And we have a document saying that that was what the terms were that were signed. So then the media said, well, even though he did all this in this part of the country, what's happening with Ukraine? And it's like, oh my gosh, how biased, how unbelievable to say that he, well, he is a powerful man. He cannot be every place in the world at the same time. So as you hear people say things that are irrelevant, that are unsustainable, are inaccurate, you need to say to yourself, whoops, what did I just hear? Here we're talking about things that happened in the Saudi Arabia, things that happened in that part of the world. And then rather than saying, great accomplishment for what happened there, or tell me more about what happened there, or when will we have certain dates now that this has been signed? Instead, they say, well, let's look over here in Ukraine. Don't look at all the things over here. When you hear that happen, please take and focus on that in your brain. What did they just do? They took me away from the thing that is real and that is the topic, and tried to subterfuge me by listening or thinking about something else. And that is a ploy of showing bias. So you need to start pointing out to yourself, whoops, what just happened there? And if a particular media, a particular radio show, a particular newspaper, a particular person continually tries to downplay good things, or to make you think about something else other than a good thing, or give you details about something you want to know about, they change the topic, then you need to be aware of that. Why are they doing that? What are they hiding? So I think that's really, really important. And the idea that the major media stations did not cover hardly any of what happened. And so there are a lot of people who don't pay attention to the news, don't want to know what's happening. And so they're easily convinced of things that are not true. And we see a lot of that. And so it's important that we all begin to start thinking strategically and critically. Does that make sense to me? And if not, ask a friend that you know thinks critically and is informed. Could you tell me if you agree with this or why did this happen? And you know, for so long, we have been fed information from the last press secretary, Jean Saint-Pierre, and much of what she said was not accurate. And yet, day after day after day, she would keep saying the same thing. Now, some of what she said wasn't even true at the time she said it. And some of it we have now come to see wasn't true. And yet, she was saying it. She said at one point she met regularly with the president, and another time she said she rarely saw him. So neither one of those can be accurate if she's saying both of them. So either you were seeing him on a regular basis or you weren't. You can't be doing both. So when you hear those kinds of incongruous statements from somebody, stop and say, wait a minute, she said last week this and now she's saying this. Now, that's on straight out facts. We have had this situation this last week or two talking about tariffs. And it has been very interesting to me that as I listen to some people talking on the media who hopefully are intelligent and have been in some positions of power where you make negotiations. So the first thing I want you to think about is in a negotiation, do you tell everybody that I'm going to go in and I'm going to negotiate this, this, and this? And they're talking about giving this, and then I will give this. No, you don't do that. And I remember when I was working on a negotiation on a very big deal on a building in the county, and I was on the negotiating team, and the bill came over from the Senate, and it pretty much said, buy it, do it. There was no parameters. And the speaker came to me and said, no, we have got to have parameters here. We've got to have cost figures. We've got to have this, we've got to have that. And he said, can you do that? And I said, yes, I can do that. Because the way it came over from the Senate was so horrible that even if I'd had my eyes closed, I could have done a better job. So I said, yes, Mr. Speaker, I can do that. So as in the negotiation, there was a lot of give and take. And what happened is that it made the lobbyists very angry at me, who then said a lot of terrible things about me, and then got a media person to call me and say if I didn't tell them the status of the negotiations, that they would blast me on the media until I gave them the status of the negotiations. And I said, well, that's not how you negotiate. And no, I will not be giving you that. And so we had to put up with several days of me being blasted big time in the media. And I went to a party that night with a lady came up to me named Sandy, who I didn't know very well. But she came up to me and gave me this great big hug. And she says, I've been praying for you all week as you've been blasted on the radio. And so I said, well, you know, sometimes when people want to know information that they can profit from, they're willing to do some things that maybe not as nice as could be. Anyway, in the negotiations, I got everything I wanted except for one thing. And when that came up on the House floor, I voted no on that one particular situation, one piece of the major negotiation. A year later, the group came back and asked for a change in that. And I stood up on the floor and said, you know what? I'm voting no to their request because it was part of the negotiation that I thought should have been in the original contract, but they gave away that part and made it very difficult. And now they are going to have to suffer with the consequences, which means they are not going to get more taxpayers' money. They're going to have to deal with it on their own and their corporation. So they didn't end up getting what they wanted in the end. But that's why you need to know who's negotiating, what are they negotiating, and then leave them alone. If they're on the radio, the TV, the newspaper, the coffee shop talk, and they're saying, well, I don't know about this term or I don't know about that term. Of course, if you want to know all the terms, get yourself elected. And if you have an elected official that is putting out terms to other people who are involved and could benefit fiscally from that, then you have not hired a good elected official. So, if an elected official is being blasted on any media, figure out why are they being blasted. And if in fact it's because they're not giving information they shouldn't be giving, then you need to stand up for that person, regardless of who it is, Republican or Democrat. It's very important. So when you're hearing people now saying, well, I don't know the negotiation terms. Of course, you don't know the negotiation terms. That's what negotiations are for. When they are finished and people sign, then you can talk about it. Then you can talk about, well, we did talk about that term, but we decided this, or we gave that away with this as a trade. And that is very important. So we're hearing a lot about negotiations, and well, they've been negotiating for a week. So why don't I have answers? Well, first of all, that's a very naive statement. And if you think that you can negotiate a major anything in a week, you probably don't have too many major negotiations that you've been involved in. It takes time for people to build trust and for you to hear their side, for you to express your side, for you to talk about where are overlap areas where you can agree, and then start to work from there. These are complicated things. These aren't grocery lists or something very easy. These are important things. And when we are talking, and I'm going to talk more about it in another one of my points for today, but when you're talking about negotiating on tariffs, for instance, oh my gosh, the things that were said about tariffs were so naive and so, this has never been done before. Excuse me? Yeah, it was done in the 1700s, and tariffs were much more a part of our income up until 1912. So, first of all, the person who would say that doesn't know their history, which is very upsetting because unfortunately, many people have not read the Constitution. They don't know about our founding fathers. They've been brainwashed to think that our founding fathers were horrible human beings, when in fact, when you go to their homes, which are many of them are now open as public museums, and you see what they were reading and what they were thinking and what they sacrificed and all the different things that happened. You get a feel for what the dedication was, and especially somebody like George Washington, who did much for our country, including the things that happened at Valley Forge. And in my office, I have a picture of him at Valley Forge praying. And I asked my class one day, what do you think he was doing? And one of my students said, I think he was looking for his contact lenses. And I just thought that was precious. I had to tell him there weren't contact lenses back then. And he was praying. And so we talked about the importance of praying for our elected officials, and especially in times of trouble. And I reminded them that they could always pray before taking any of my tests. But that being said, people don't know the sacrifices of our founding fathers and what they have done to set a foundation that is coming on 250 years. So think about your house. Is that foundation set for 250 years? Is your family, could you go back 250 years in your family and say who all your family was? But yet these people had 250-year vision just so far to set the foundation for what this country is. And I realize that there are some people that want division in our country, and that is something that we need to be very well aware of. I remember when I was young having Khrushchev say, we will overtake you from the inside. And I wondered at the time, what does that mean? And I believe now, my personal opinion is that it is trying to divide us where we don't stand up for our country, where we don't stand up for our flag, where we say being patriotic is old-fashioned. All of those things are divisions when, in fact, we should be dang lucky we live in this country. And for those of you who have followed me, you realize I've done a lot of traveling to a lot of countries, and I come home saying, I appreciate my country so much. And there's a reason why people want to be in this country, and we take it for granted. But it's really important that we don't allow people to talk against our country any more than you would want somebody talking against your brother, your sister, your mother, your father. Inside your family, if you want to talk about different things that need to be worked on or fixed, that's fine. But you don't go out in the neighborhood and say, oh, yeah, my sister, brother, father, mother, whatever, is a schmuck. That's not how you do it. You don't divide that way. You fix on the inside and you take and be a team on the outside. And that's what's really, really important. So we get told that there are, that these tariffs are terrible, that they're so arbitrary. One country gets this and another country gets that, and it changes and it changes. It should just be stable. Well, again, that is the most naive comment possible. Of course, there are differences. When you have children, I'm going to try to relate all this back to your own family, and so that you can see in common sense, does this make sense or not? So when you are going to negotiate with your 4-year-old, and you're going to negotiate with your 10-year-old and your 15-year-old, you are not going to negotiate the same way because they are not capable of that. Each country is different in where they are economically, where they are in geopolitical issues. There are many, many criteria and variables. So each and every one has to be negotiated with differently. And so for some of the countries that had done some pretty unbelievable tariffs on our products so that they weren't even a market that we could be in, that was not okay. We were shut out of Germany for cars. When I went to Germany the first time and I had gotten some flak that I had purchased a Mercedes, and it was shortly after I had been stocked, and I decided I wanted a bigger car, that if that happened to me again, that I could be in a car, that if I needed to ram somebody, that I could, and that I would come out alive. And I had a lot of supplies because my district was so big, and I had a lot of emergency supplies in my back seat, and I wanted a bigger car. And I found this car on sale that was less than the cost of another car that I was looking at that I had considered, and it was a good deal. And so I got blasted in the media for buying a Mercedes. And I said, well, you know what? First of all, I can buy whatever I dang well want to buy because this is America and I can choose what I want to buy. Secondly, I got a good deal. And if Mr. Reporter, if you want to see what you paid for your car, I bet you I paid less for mine. So that story kind of went away. But with the idea that, you know, driving a Mercedes is a big deal, I go to Germany, cabs are Mercedes. Mercedes everywhere. Now, granted, they're, you know, manufactured there, but I hardly saw any American cars. I saw a lot of Italian cars, very, very small, but I did not see a lot of American cars. And so, you know, it's different in each country, but our cars should not be in a situation where not only with the tariffs on top, but other criteria that we had to do in order to bring our products into Germany or what other country. Some of our products in the dairy industries, even to our friends in Canada also, where there was some 700% tariffs. Well, it's not really a good neighbor policy if you're going to say, I'm going to switch with you and you have to pay me 700% more. So all these things had gone on and on and on for years, and nobody said enough's enough. Along comes a man who doesn't really give a rip what other people think. He decides that this is not fair. Now, I put out to you, if you're going to sell with your neighbor something and they give you a price and then say, oh, because you're going to get it, I'm going to add 700% to it, but I will take yours at the price we negotiated. Is that fair? No, it's not fair. So how long as Americans are we going to allow every country or any country to have unfair tariffs with us? So the ones that we had the most problems with, of course, got the higher tariffs. And then they didn't want to negotiate, so the tariffs went up. And then they didn't want to negotiate, and it went more. So then they decided to come to the table, and because it was hurting their economy. And we as a country are a very big market. And so they decided that they were going to come to the table and negotiate. Now, it's like your teenager. They aren't going to do what you want them to do. And the first day you may say, I am so mad at you. You're never going to get your phone back. Now, you don't mean that. You're just mad at the time and you want to make a point. And then the child comes back and says, you know, mom or dad, depending, I blew it. I really should have not done that. And I get it. So if I do these five things around the house, can I get my phone back? And then, as mom or dad, you will make a negotiation, which you're not going to tell all the other children about because you don't want them to be flaunting that in their sibling's face. And you negotiate it privately. And then the sibling does, or your child does what they're supposed to do. They get the phone back. That's how this is. You start with, here's my goal. I want to have fair tariffs across the world. Now, he did say that there are some countries that are economically poor and that they need to have some help. And so their tariffs will be different as a way of generosity and kindness. So that one would be like your child coming and saying, oh, I can say one of my children, how come this sibling got braces and I didn't? Maybe that was because you didn't need braces. Oh. Do you want me to have braces put on your lovely teeth? No. Well, that's how come your sibling got them and you didn't. So that's the same thing here. How come that country is not getting as high a tariff? Because they can't afford it. And out of kindness and wanting to have the world all be in a better shape, having a lower tariff for them is something that is going to be part of the formula. I think that's fair. Okay, so now let's get to the other formulas. So the people who came to the table, their tariffs were lowered, but it didn't happen overnight. As people said, well, they lowered this tariff when they lower that tariff. Well, because that one was being negotiated with on Monday, and that country was being negotiated on Friday. So we don't know what the negotiations are going to look like on Friday. So no, we're not going to reduce it until after we've talked to them to see are they going to be reasonable or not. So I heard a lot of that during the week. And I looked at the chart of all the different countries and their tariffs and, you know, how many times it would take of meetings to go through. And tariffs and trade are not something that you can do in one negotiation because there's so many implications about, you know, where did this steel come from and where did this component come from and all kinds of different things that in America, we may not know exactly the problem that country X is having, but it isn't until we get to the negotiations that they say, well, you know, we need a change on this component because of this. And there are lots and lots of products. And so you can't just say, okay, I have an hour to negotiate this and then we'll be ready. No, it takes a long time to go through all the products. But once you're at the table, then you can start to say, are we working collaboratively? I was in a negotiation one time with Julia Patterson, and I did not like part of what was happening. And she looked at me and she said, why are you so adamant about this? What do you fear? And I said, well, I fear that this will happen. And she goes, that will never happen. And I started to say, well, actually, and one of our staff said, actually, it did happen. And it was in yesterday's paper. And she looked at me and she said, are you serious? It already happened. And I said, yeah, that's why we need to change this law. And she said, all right, I get it. I never would have believed that this was even possible, much less that it happened. And that was great negotiations because Julia listened and she would ask me, what do you fear? Because she didn't have rural in her area. And so rural was very different to her. And she would listen to say, this is not something I'm familiar with, but I know you are. And I know that you will tell me what your fear is. And when I don't want you to have that fear, because I wouldn't want that happening in my district either. And I don't want your people to be suffering. So we'll change it so that your district and your people are safer. And that was good negotiating. And we negotiated very well together for many years. Doesn't mean I always got my way, but at least I got my way long enough and often enough that I feel very comfortable to say that we were good negotiators together. So the tariffs negotiations, people are saying, well, they're not equal. I even heard today on the radio, somebody saying, well, this is just too mind-boggling that one country's got this and one country's got that. And I'm like, oh, I can't believe you just said that. You sound so dumb when you say that. Don't say that. Because of course it's going to be different. And it's going to be different as we progress. And so being upset that there are different levels of tariff and that they're changing, that's what happens in negotiations. That's a sign of good negotiations. So be aware that when people say things that are, I don't like to use the word ignorant, but that are really not well-versed, that sounds better, are not well-versed in how to negotiate, then they don't understand the process. And so when you hear things like that, think about your own family's negotiations. Do they ever change once you tell your six-year-old that this is how something is? When they're 10, do you have the same rules or do you change it? Does that make you a bad parent? You change the rule? No. Your child grew up. Your child had new parameters in their life. New things have happened. So you change. And that's what helps a healthy relationship. And it makes for the negotiations to continue. So do we know whether these countries that have signed these agreements are going to do it by the letter of the law? No, we don't know. But we will trust and then verify and then adjust and then trust and then verify and then adjust. And in any good relationship, you need to see progress and you need to see that people are hearing you and they're following through. If you have a relationship with anybody and they say they're going to pick you up Tuesday at 10 and they always show up an hour and a half later, you will negotiate and tell them that you want them to be picking you up at 9. So you have to look at what is this pattern? What is their culture? What do you need to do to make sure that you can have a relationship where you can call up another country and say, you know, prime minister, king, whatever, you know, in our negotiations, we agreed on X. Doesn't look like that's what's happening. So can you clue me in to what we need to adjust? Or, you know, that's part of the agreement. And in another part of the agreement, it says if that isn't what happens, then this is what we do. So I'm going to give you whatever is appropriate, an hour, a week, a month to get things back on track again. And then we move forward. And that makes a healthy relationship because all relationships change, products change, variables change, but setting up the relationship now. There was another comment made. Well, he talked to this person who has been a terrible criminal for years and years and years and blah, blah, blah. And if that person is the power of that country, how are you going to negotiate with them if you don't talk to them? So one of the things is that we need to be able to talk to every single person that is in power in each country. And that means having a relationship. And whether you like him or you don't like him, I really don't care. The fact is that he has a unique personality. Love it or hate it. It is the unique personality that likes to get along with people and be very clear with them. So when he goes into negotiations, he says very clearly, Iran is not going to have a nuclear capability. Boom. Now, I heard this afternoon people going, I don't think he's been clear. I nearly drove off the road when I heard that. Who are you saying that? Of course he's been saying it. How much more clear can he be? So again, if you've heard any elected officials say, there will be no X, and they say it repeatedly, there's no vacillating that today it's X, tomorrow it's Y, the next day it's Z. They continuously say there will be no X. And then somebody comes in and says, well, it's not very clear. You need to say, well, wait a minute. I think there's a problem here. Why are you not processing that that person has clearly said this? Or if you think they've said something else and I don't believe that, or I know that that's not true, we shouldn't be just accepting whatever somebody says because people say all kinds of crazy things. And if the newspapers repeat it, then people who don't process completely, don't always do their own intelligence and investigation to say, well, that doesn't sound familiar or make sense, and so let's evaluate it. So the tariffs are an important tool. They will change, they will continue to change. And when this started to happen, Trump said very, very clearly, hold on, there's going to be some rough times. And that's how negotiations go. It's not pretty when you're negotiating. Think about what I told you about when I negotiated for those couple of weeks, and for a week I got blasted every single day. It wasn't pretty, but you have to get through that. And hopefully some people that realized what was happening, as my now friend Sandy said, I really appreciate that you stood up to saying negotiations need to be private until they are completed. And, you know, we did try one time in the legislature to negotiate labor contracts in public, and it was a disaster. People were threatening people on the team for even making suggestions about what about this, what about that. And it got really, really ugly that people couldn't even talk, that were trying to do their very best. And so what it did is it ended up making the fact that people didn't even want to make any suggestions or think outside the box. And what we have right now is a president that says, let's think outside the box. This hasn't worked. When you look at the video of Pelosi from 1998, she was younger then too, by the way, and you look at her, I want you to realize it's her, and she's talking about the importance of tariffs. And then you look at the tape of Obama in 2011 saying we need tariffs. And then you look at Biden in 2012 saying we need tariffs. And now we're in 2025 and we're talking about tariffs. 1998 was a long time ago. And if they could not have done it from 1995 and 1998, 2011, 12, all the way up to now, it takes a special person to say, okay, this has been a mess. So I'm going to take on the mess and get it unmessed. First of all, I don't care who you are. You're going to willing to take on a mess that's been around for nearly 30 years, and say, I'm going to do it. And then you tell the people, hold on, because there are people that have vested interest in this. There are people that are funneling money here and funneling money there, and they are not going to be happy. And whenever you expose anybody for some hands in the cookie jar, they aren't going to like it. And there's hands in the cookie jars. So he said, hold on. So immediately the media started saying, oh my gosh, nobody's going to be able to retire. Older people are going to be destitute on the streets. This is going to be horrific. He told you there'd be a time. If you're about to retire and you were told by the person at the negotiating table, hold on, wait a month, wait 2 months. It's not going to be that big a time wait for you to wait. And now the stock market is up. Stock market's higher right now than it's been in a very long time. And I know one of my neighbors, when things crashed, I was getting in my car and they said, so have you looked at your stock today? And I said, well, no, I didn't look at my stock today, but I did put in some new trade orders to buy more. And he looked at me and he says, are you serious? And I said, yep, as what goes down goes back up again. So my husband came in yesterday and said, honey, have you seen what had just happened in the stock market? So no, I wasn't worried. And the idea that we were warned to hold on, it's going to be a rough ride, buy baby buy is I think the words that were used. And then he gets accused of insider trading. Well, when you say on the media to the entire world, buy baby buy, that is not my idea of insider trading. And Pelosi should know what insider trading looks like. That is not it. So, you know, again, when people are saying this is insider trading, do you think that's insider trading? I don't think so. So, were we shocked that this was going to be a rocky course? Well, if you were shocked, then you need to start studying a little bit more. We shouldn't have been shocked, number one. And secondly, he told you that that was what is going to happen. So we have these tariffs that are flexible at this moment. They will continue to be flexible. They will get better. And the issue is, and I think that this is absolutely beautiful, reciprocal tariffs. When I heard that word, I just about jumped out of my seat. Yeah! Reciprocal tariffs. So I'm not doing anything to you. I am just going to be as gracious to you as you are to me. I love it. I am not mean. I am not cruel. I understand if you think that we need a 20% tariff, then I'm happy to give you a 20% tariff. If you want to give me a 50% tariff, I'm happy to give you a 50% tariff. And if you decide that you don't want tariffs at all, I'm happy with that too. So, this whole thing about, well, he's being impractical and it's hard and how do you decide? Well, for me, the reciprocal was like the magic bullet. I just do in return whatever you've done to me. That I think is very gracious. And I think it is also very prudent.
Kathy will be back next week for the next part of this discussion right here on Valley 104.9.